Launch all sequence has started.
Crew one for all.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Moon Snacks, the podcast where we choose a very special person, a leader in an incredible field, and send them to the moon.
And explore their unexpected connections to the world of cinema.
And on their journey to the moon, they're allowed to pick three movies to take with them.
And really, this is a podcast about a discovery of a journey as we reflect on aspirations, achievements, and the possibilities of life.
And we're so excited to take you guys on the journey with us. This very special season is kicked off with Walda Roseman. And I was just thinking, why is this called Moon Snacks?
Because we're sending people to the moon and we got to give them a snack, Jessica.
And this is like bite-sized versions of wisdom. Hosting this podcast is my cinema friend in crime, my kindred spirit in film and storytelling, Ed Hoffman. Hi, Ed.
My co-host is Jessica Fox.
This podcast is hosted and sponsored by Highlands and Islands Enterprise. Thank you guys so much. And also Light Dark Light, a creative agency. So thank you both very much for the opportunity to send our favorite people all the way to the moon.
I am really excited because we have a friend and a colleague, Walda Roseman, who's going to be chatting with us, and then we're going to be sending Walda to the moon. Walda Roseman is a distinguished executive, strategic leader with a decades-long career, communications, technology, international development. As a former chief operating officer of the Internet Society, she played a critical role in advancing its mission to secure a secure, globally connected internet for all. Walda's pioneering contributions to global telecommunications policy and her advocacy for bridging the digital divide have transformed access to technology in underserved regions. Walda's renowned for her ability to unite diverse stakeholders. She balances innovation with ethical governance, has left a lasting legacy of inclusion and progress in the digital era. Walda is currently serving as the chair of the Arthur C. Clarke Foundation. And really, I can keep on going. She was the first international communication lead for the FCC. And she's held executive roles at Intelsat and served as the executive vice president and COO of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So friend, colleague, neighbor, Walda, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Ed. It's a pleasure to be here.
Walda, I have a quick question for you before we jump into it, because you have done so much over so many different roles. I'm just curious, what's the longest trip you've taken? Because the moon is quite a long one.
Well, it is a long way. The longest trip I have ever taken, and I've taken quite a few of this, have lasted about 12 weeks, visiting multiple countries. I've been fortunate to tour around the globe. I didn't get my first passport till I was 32 years old. It never occurred to me that I would be able to leave the country of the U.S. And it's fascinating how fate steps in sometimes.
That must have been quite a liberated experience, getting your passport at that age.
It took me a while to get my birth certificate so I could apply for my passport, because my mother, who was an actress, performer, singer, dancer, was of that generation where if you weren't an ingenue, which today we would refer to as a teenager, you wouldn't get hired anymore. So she apparently, my not knowing at the time, was not entirely truthful on my birth certificate of how old she was when I was born. And so the first one that she sent me was a Xerox with her age scratched out, which of course invalidated it.
So do you have early memories of your mother acting? Did you watch her work?
Well, I watched her work. I was in the rehearsal of, she was in nightclubs and then in early television. When they needed a child, I was there, so I acted with her.
Did you enjoy that experience?
I think so. I was painfully shy as a young person. But I learned on the stage I could be someone else. It was natural. You know, I've often thought of maybe writing a story about people's lives and how they look from the inside and from the outside that I would call Peephole. I had an unusual in the context of how we think of upbringing, an unusual upbringing, but it was my life. And so as a child, I didn't think that much of it.
Do you feel that that experience shaped perhaps your interests later on?
Well, I think it definitely did. On the one hand, I can remember walking along Fifth Avenue with my mother one day, and we were stopped by a man at that time, a well-known actor named Red Buttons.
Poseidon Adventure, yeah.
And Red and my mother stopped to talk, and then he turned to me. I was probably about five. And he said, "And what do you want to be when you grow up?" And I said, "I don't know, but I don't want to go into show business." That was the beginning of it. Interestingly, though, I ended up in, for many years, on the management side.
Since we are going to have a time-limited experience with you and send you to the moon, we do want you to be in good company. So you've chosen three movies to take with you. Well, what is the first film that you've chosen?
By the way, that's a real challenge. Trying to figure out what would be your three films that you would take with you. I thought all the way back to seeing Old Yeller and Toby Tyler before I could move forward here. But the easiest one was that It's a Wonderful Life.
I think although it's a seasonal movie, you can really watch it at any time, can't you?
Yes, and I think we all go through ups and downs in our lives. We all get discouraged. We think that we're not worth as much as we would hope to be. I think this movie had a big impression. I know it had a big impression on me because what it demonstrated is that for every kindness, for every little step forward, for every a small accomplishment, it has a butterfly effect and can do so much more good than one would ever expect or understand at the time.
Mary, I know what I'm going to do tomorrow and the next day and next year and the year after that. I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. Then I'm coming back here and go to college and see what they know. And then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build airfields. I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories high. I'm going to build bridges a mile long. What, are you going to throw a rock? Hey, that's pretty good. What'd you wish, Mary?
Buffalo gals, can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight? Buffalo gals, can't you come out tonight?
Dance by the light of the moon. What'd you wish when you threw that rock?
Oh, no.
Come on, tell me.
If I don't, it might not come through.
What is it you want, Barry? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down.
I love everything about it except one thing, which I'll come to. But, you know, making connection to the work you've done, you certainly had a career based on mission. And really, I think serving communities and the global world through communications and through technology. And to a certain extent, I think you can make the case that it's also about community. It's about connection. And it's about what happens when people come together to help each other. Do you see that any way of having an influence in terms of also what you have ended up spearheading and leading?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the three movies I've chosen, they all at some level involve communications, connecting with whatever the sentient being is that is in front of us. My very, very first trip for Intelsat was a 12-country trip. I went with my brief, the brief for Sudan. Sudan had just been taken over by the Muslim and the and people were expecting war, but it hadn't happened yet. They had, from Intelsat, 26 circuits, but were only using two, and we didn't understand why. So I asked them and didn't quite get a straight answer, but got a very proud tour of their Earth station by the woman manager of it, who also was pointing out how clever they were to be able to fix A, B, C, D, and F. I'm sure they were using an awful lot of plumber's tape for and ingenuity, a lot of ingenuity to make those two circuits work. My next trip, I flew from there to Cairo, and I spoke with Ministry of Communications, or it was actually Egypt Telecom at the time, and said I had been in Sudan, and he said, yes. He says, we have been quietly sending them enough fuel so that they could power two circuits, because we believe that as long as we can communicate, there's a chance of peace. And that stuck with me, that as long as we can communicate and we have the tools for communication, and we have the faith in it, by the way, there's a chance for peace. There's a chance for so many good things to happen. And that's what's really powered a lot of my career.
So I have to follow that, because it makes so much sense in terms of what you've done. And that really, to me, the message of Wonderful Life is life is valuable. The one thing about that movie, partly the message, sometimes when I watch it, is to stay where you're at, to stay in your location. And your life has really been a key thing, is about growth. How do you look at that whole issue of in the situation, George Bailey really was selfless in staying in his community, staying where he was, kind of giving up his dreams. And yet it looks like you've lived a life where you've explored, you've traveled, you've gone places. You've had personal growth, I think, as partly what you're about. How do you bring those things to connection? When do you stay and when do you go?
When I was at Intelsat, the U.S. ended up getting elected as the second American Director General while I was there, a man named Dean Birch. And Dean Birch had been Barry Goldwater's campaign director when Nixon lost his palace guard. The government felt that they needed an honest man to advise them, and Dean was a lawyer, so it was Dean, and the same thing happened at Intelsat. Turns out that Dean was raised on Alcatraz. His father was the chief warden. And so when I, after more than 6 years, was asked to start International, the Federal Communications Commission, Dean and I were talking, and he says, you know, Walda, I've never had a career, but I've had an interesting life. And I think that's, you know, my career has not been like his by a long shot, but I would say that my life became bigger than even I was able to dream. I did not have the kind of rooting in my home that A Wonderful Life portrays. I had to keep moving. You know, I was alone a lot. I lived alone in my home most of the time from when I was 11. I became very independent, very self-sufficient, and yet a romantic who believed that anything could be accomplished. And with the grace of God, I ended up in a lot of wonderful situations and scary ones sometimes, from which I emerged, fortunately, unharmed. But I think maybe faith, optimism, and determination, as Arthur C. Clarke would say, imagination, a powerful combination. And I was just plain lucky.
You know, luck is the residue of design. I know enough about the technology and certainly the aerospace field. There weren't too many women when I got to NASA, and that was in the 80s. So you're a pioneer in a lot of ways, and obviously comfortable with that.
It didn't occur to me I was being a pioneer. it occurred to me that I wanted that job, and the timing was very good. It turns out that there I was, I would say, for almost all of my career, I never had a job that had existed before. I was always the first woman at that senior level. That often allowed me to bring in some other women. A lot of it was just timing.
Because you brought up a theme, this idea that life can get quite hard, that it's not always plain sailing, that there are moments where you do lose hope or faith or determination, and some kind of resilience comes, whether it's an angel, whether it's a voice within, whether it's a friend, whether it's a serendipitous meeting, that tends to lift you up again and help that kind of resilience. And I was just wondering, in your own life and career, has there been a moment where your resilience was tested and you felt proud that you rose to the occasion?
I believe there have been many moments like that, both personally and professionally. It wasn't always popular to be a professional woman or a senior woman at the times I was. I think that I was raised by faith. My grandmother took care of me till she passed away when I was 4 and a half. My mother was out busy performing. I then followed her around. I learned to pray. I still pray. And I think that, in fact, I know that faith has carried me in a lot of places. In my personal life, and Ed may know this, I spent 2 years in an orphanage while my mother was traveling when I was 7 and 8. I couldn't be adopted. The girls and boys around me could and were going to and from foster homes. It was a very good orphanage. But nevertheless, you know, I was scared and I was alone a lot of the time. I came out through that. I think that was that certainly strengthened me in many ways. I'm not sure in retrospect it was always good for me, but I began to understand that I could do things. There have been things in my personal life that have been tough for all of us, right? And professionally, you know, there are roadblocks along the way, but there are mentors along the way.
Well, it's like it's a wonderful life.
Exactly. I just want to say too, you know, that sense of self-reliance and self-determination, I can tell with you, comes with a huge amount of empathy. And I think that comes from the reminder in yourself that we are connected and that there's something bigger than just you at play.
Clarence gave a gift of The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and inscribed in it, remember, no man is a failure who has friends.
You can, on average, extend your lifespan by 7.5 years because of this one thing. I think Harvard did this study. And the one thing is about feeling connected to community. I have to say, well, you're actually kind of now reminding me of Amy Adams. I would put you forward to talk to an alien species if they came. So can you give us your second film, please?
Well, the second film's Arrival. And it's based on a novella. It's also been called a short story by Ted Chiang. It's called The Story of Your Life. The Arthur C. Clarke Foundation gave Ted its Imagination Award in 2020. Interestingly, he was introduced. We invite someone who's important in to their career or their lives to introduce them. And he chose to be introduced by Jill Tarter. Now, Jill Tarter is the chair ex officio of SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. She was, of course, the main character in the movie Contact, right? She was the model character, but she also had an impact on Ted Chiang's story in life. There is an ongoing, still, debate about whether or not we're very wise to be sending out radio signals to try to contact extraterrestrial intelligence. And one of the people who the Clark Foundation's given an award to was Stephen Hawking. And Stephen was against it. He felt we were asking for trouble. And he was not alone in that. Whereas Jill Tarter, who we gave an award to in 2018, believed that any intelligent being that could arrive on this planet had technology and development far superior to ours and was probably coming for peaceful purposes. Amy Adams played just such a scientist, where the debate was happening in this movie. As you may recall, it turns out that she was ultimately able, with the help of all of the 12 other countries, to decipher their language and understand that they might need we Earthlings later, and they wanted us to learn how to work together as a global entity instead of fighting with each other. The work that I've done at the international level has been a good example how, particularly in the communications area, I mean, there are the fights over radio spectrum, but ultimately, at the end, everybody has to agree if we want to be able to share the frequencies that support our satellites, our cell phones, our electricity, our exploration. All of this is based on global collaboration, which is what I engaged in for a number of decades. And I love her courage in this, where her faith and that belief that they were not here to harm us, so don't kill them, is an incredible example of how I would hope we would all confront the challenges of the future of this planet.
T-minus 9 minutes to shell access. T-minus 9 minutes to shell access.
What's that for?
A visual aid. Look, I'm never going to be able to speak their words if they are talking. But they might have some sort of written language or basis for visual communication.
Okay, let's get started.
The music won several awards because it was composed, A, in a way so it would not sound like the music in 2001, A Space Odyssey, but so that it would integrate with the language that was being communicated. And I think that if one were to understand the music and listen to it along with the acting, it would augment the power of the movie.
So for those who haven't seen it, this movie really is about a linguist who has been put forward to communicate with an alien species that has arrived on Earth. They want to offer what she believes is some kind of tool. Other people see it as a weapon, and conflict ensues. But at the very end, what she realizes, and again, for those folks who haven't seen that, want to just skip over this part because it is a spoiler alert. What she realizes is that part of the understanding of their language is the flexibility of seeing time. And she's able to see forward into her own timeline. And the part that really stays with me is that a gentleman in question wants to get together with her. And she has a prescient, talking about that word again, vision that she will have a baby with him. But this baby will not live. He will then leave her because she knew this and went for it anyway. And she decides to go for it anyway. And that really sits with me. And I just was curious about both your thoughts about emotionally about that.
Well, it's a tough one, isn't it? First of all, do we really want to know our future?
Even bigger than that, what would we change if we knew our future and we went back?
Right, or could we change, you know? Could we change our future? She'd already shown herself to be quite courageous. It was a very courageous decision, wasn't it? But, you know, it sits hard with me because to know that you are giving birth to a human being or a child and you're watching it develop and then finding out that this future vision is true, or was she hoping that it wasn't true? And if that special gentleman knew what was coming, what would he have done in the beginning?
Well, it's another thing. It gets again to the first movie, It's a Wonderful Life. You go through life and you know that there's going to be pain. If you want to be involved in love, then love is tough. I mean, it's even getting there. And so, you know, are you willing to go through the issues to enjoy the aspects of life? Otherwise you just stay right indoors, right? You never leave. So that's a powerful movie for a variety of reasons. And you hit on to me the thing that is most powerful. The other thing to me is just, what would humans' reaction be to basically aliens have arrived in their ships and they're out there? And I'm not, I worry a little bit about how we would handle that. But it's a powerful kind of a thing. It's also, I guess, metaphorically, the whole notion of how do we handle those we don't know.
Do you know, I love so much this choice. I love there's a linguistic scholar as a hero, that communication is the most critical thing. You know, Ed, you always say that really it comes down to, will people sit at the same table and work with each other? And you're completely right. When I was a teenager, I worked at a lumberyard. And someone very kind there gave me a VHS tape, his favorite movie. And on it said The Day the Earth Stood Still. And I remember going home as a teenager and putting this VHS tape in and being absolutely heartbroken at the beginning of that movie. I promise this is not a spoiler alert for people who haven't seen it, but this alien comes down and someone immediately shoots them, so they have no idea what this alien race has brought them. And I felt like it was a very healing process watching Arrival, because it was a much more hopeful version of a gift that another civilization could be giving us. So it's just beautiful.
I also wonder, as you know, chair of the Arthur C. Clarke Foundation, this is a movie also about social responsibility. It's about technology. It's about innovation, bringing us together and improving things. What's the connection for what you do at as chair? What are you proud of? What do you feel good about in terms of the Clarke Foundation? I know that's very important to you these days.
I pulled out one of favorite quotes of Arthur Clarke that addresses this. He said, two possibilities exist. Either we are alone in the universe or we are not. Both are equally terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Waldo, can I ask, if it's not too personal, where do you sit on that spectrum?
Oh, I don't think we're alone in the universe. I would not be surprised. In fact, I'd be surprised if it were not the case that the reason we're unable to imagine any entity reaching this planet or our reaching theirs because of how long it takes is because we are still entrenched in scientific analysis based on gravity.
This is starting to sound like Interstellar. Simply, yes.
Mm-hmm. Very simply, and that there is clearly one more, if not many more, dimensions. Yes.
And do you really like in Arrival how, again, spoiler alert for those who haven't seen it, that the language is about time? It's actually an understanding the language, which you then understand the psychology of a community. You actually start seeing time in a different way.
Yes. I think that, I'm certainly not the first, and I won't be the last, who says that the older I get and the more questions I have, and I think that's the way science is right now, certainly when we look at the universe, that we are just beginning to scratch the dirt off the top of the iceberg, to mix metaphors.
Isn't that wonderful? To me, that's very exciting. I feel less claustrophobic on Earth and more incredibly hopeful that there's so much to understand.
Yeah, in fact, I often think about how Arthur C. Clarke is not still here to see all of this. You know, he started out, as the story goes, and I believe this is true, when he was 10 years old, he lived on a farm, and he could go out and he could see the stars, and he made his own little rough telescope and would sit there at night and look up at the moon and imagine what it would be like when mankind could step on the moon. And he spent a lot of his life trying to prove to the Brits, first, the British Interplanetary Society, that they could do things. They could get there. They could launch. Weren't ready for it, though. But, he would just be so thrilled with some of the information that is beginning to come back from our explorations. As Ed knows, the Clark Foundation recently gave an award to STSci, which is the group that takes the data that comes back from the telescopes, from Webb and Hubble, and there'll soon be a third one, and analyzes it, and also produces the beautiful, inspiring photos of what the universe and portions of the universe look like. We are just getting a sniff of it, and I'm sure that Clark would be so excited.
What is the Clark Foundation about, and why is it so important?
Well, as you probably know, Arthur Clarke was a scientist. He was one who did the calculation that created the geostationary satellite orbit. It was his concept. If you could get, this was in 1946, that if you could get the batteries, that you could launch a satellite up to that level, and then place one over each ocean region. You could have global satellite communications. So he was a scientist. He was a science fiction writer, clearly. We know about 2001, A Space Odyssey. Yeah, he predicted 50 or more technical developments, including what we now call deep learning, computer learning, or there are other names for it. HAL 9000, the computer in 2001, A Space Odyssey, was conceived in the early to mid-60s. Think about how many years ago that was. And as it turns out, if you look at 2010, it wasn't the computer's fault. It was the fault of who programmed it. Clark said that for those of us, and this was well before we had the screens we have now, for those of us who become enamored with screens, remember that data is not knowledge, and knowledge is not vision. He was a great proponent of the power of pairing imagination or creativity or curiosity or whatever that cluster of imagination qualities are with expertise, empiricism, and determination to get things done. And he also was an educator, a science educator. He loved the arts. He was a diver. He was a very interesting man. And so the Clark Foundation, which was started in 1983 with his help, is focused on promoting and recognizing the power of imagination paired with expertise and a determination to benefit society. And we have increasingly been putting an emphasis on young people and on intergenerational collaboration. As Ed knows, the HAL 9000 challenge is a new concept. We're now entering the phase where we need to raise money for it, to be very frank. But it's unique. It's unique in that we understand that we live in an AI, quantum mechanics, high-tech, quickly evolving world where good and not good could come from the pace of development. And those of us, and I would include you, Jessica, because you're a lot younger than me, and I assume, and even those in their 30s and 40s who are taking a look at how the human is going to survive and thrive in this tech world, did not grow up with it the same way as those who, in fact, were born during and around 2001, interestingly. And that unless they and we tap their experience, tap their ideas, we're not likely to get the answers all right. And so the HAL 9000 challenge is going to be to reach out to that generation and ask for their proposals for how to benefit humankind in a high-tech AI world and choose where they want their impact to be. And then those who would, ideas that would be perhaps the most creative, the most interesting, we would take the proposers and match them to experts in a intergenerational collaboration or co-mentoring relationship where they would learn from each other and as a team create a proposal that was potentially implementable. So that's what keeps me very enthusiastic right now.
Yes. Do you know, there's something very interesting about stories that linger. I always thought good folktales do this. They don't have real hard answers. It kind of brings up questions or feelings that linger with you, that stay with you after the story's over. And Emily Dickinson, when she was sending out her poems to people, she asked, I remember one of the publishers very humbly, is it alive? Which I love that question. And the two movies to me, Walter, that you've picked are alive. There's something about them that stays with you and lives with you after seeing them. So I'm happy that you have them for company when we send you to the moon. I'm now feeling very sad we're sending you to the moon because some of it is about how important community is, but there will be more people with you there happily. We keep on sending our favorite people up there, so you'll have a good time.
That's an interesting point. Is this a one-way or a two-way ticket?
It's a one-way ticket, but we have not yet had the budget for a vehicle that picks people up and takes them home. I'm sure that will come. What is your third film?
The third film is Love Actually. Well, there are 9 different sets of characters. I love the one about, I think it was Alan Rickman.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. And, well, and Emma Thompson. Well, that one, yeah. That one was heart-wrenching. Marriage that starts out looking stable and happy and successful. And then Alan Rickman ends up getting tempted and succumbs, and she finds out. And on Christmas, which is always tough, and they have 2 children together, and she's putting on a brave face. And it's a story of trying to get over it and reconcile and rebuild the trust relationship.
It's a wonderful movie. It also has wonderful music. I love near the opening, where I think it's Bill Nighy.
Yes.
Who's singing Love Is All, and he hates, that was his big success in it.
And he is
here.
Such a mess.
Oh, yeah.
Such a mess.
And this is something that was a big success for him. I think about, you know, sometimes you create things and you can't get away from it. I had my advisor, when I was at Columbia, Warner Burke, he said, be careful about the studies that you do in your dissertation, because it will follow you for the rest of your life. So pick something you like. And so I always think of that how much he disliked it. And then he's using it and updating in different ways. And it's so wonderful. And then you have the beautiful music of Nora Jones, in there, yes, and so many others. It's a wonderful movie.
It's, yeah, a wonderful movie. There's, yeah, something in it for everyone.
That was, yeah, the Christmas effort for the once great Billy Mack. Oh, dear me. How are the mighty fallen? I could safely put my hand up my ass and say that is the worst record I've heard this century. Oh, and coincidentally, I believe Billy will be a guest on my friend Mike's show in a few minutes' time. Welcome back, Bill.
So, Billy, welcome back to the airwaves. New Christmas single cover of Love Is All Around.
Except we've changed the word love to Christmas.
Yes, is that an important message to you, Bill?
Not really, Mike. Christmas is a time for people with someone they love in their lives.
And that's not you?
That's not me, Michael. When I was young and successful, I was greedy and foolish, and now I'm left with no one, wrinkled and alone.
Wow. Thanks for that, Bill.
For what?
Well, for actually giving a real answer to a question. Doesn't often happen here at Radio Watford, I can tell you.
I'll tell you why I chose it. You'll see the similarity to the other two, which we talked about in the beginning, which is the value of communications. I figure that the moon, whenever I go, if ever I go, is going to be a fairly desolate place. If I'm living in a space suit or in a space bubble, there's not going to be a lot of opportunity for interaction. I want to be able to keep being reminded about what being human is all about, the best of being human, and how love overcomes fear. And I think that we see so many different variations in love, actually, of what love is, that it would constantly be refreshing my heart and my soul while I'm on the moon.
Really, the movie is also about traveling, right, extensively through relationships, through people, through phases, through life. Many of the movies have that quality. And Walter, you've traveled extensively. Where is your favorite special place where you've been or where you go?
People have often asked me, what's your special country? And I'd say the United States. Things are changing here. I hope not too much. I saw what happens in countries where there's no safety net for the people. They're treated worse than dogs because nobody wants them, you know. There's no help for them, and particularly if you're disabled. Disabled children are sent out in the streets in a lot of countries to try to bring the money in for the parents. Some of the most beautiful countries where we visit the relics and we go to the museums and we eat the food have hiding behind that some horrendous conditions for people. You know, this country has issues. I hope, though, that we do not destroy the safety nets and the incentives where people can step up with the help and then take off on their own. But that help in stepping up is, I think, so important. So I always felt, and this is a beautiful country, you know, that's when I stopped traveling internationally, and I've been, I've been to 100 countries. I've seen about 60, you know, but I've been to 100 countries. But I've not been to the U.S. national parks in the center of the United States. So in 2017, I started signing up so I could see the Grand Canyon and Bryce National Park and Zion, and just gorgeous. This is an extraordinary country, and I am delighted and blessed to have been born into it. I did nothing to deserve it, and I think that's a large part of what keeps me going. I did nothing to deserve my wonderful life, so maybe I can do something to help others.
Is there for you an approach or a key to what good communication looks like?
Listening.
Well, Walter, we have only a couple minutes left. This has been a joy. And now that I know you live down the road from Ed, I'm tempted to move to your neighborhood.
One of the most beautiful places in the United States is where we are. So there you go.
It's perfect. Before you go, we do have a couple of other orders of business. Because we're not monsters, we are going to allow you to take a snack, which you have chosen, and it is...
Well, I better take 2 bags of Oreos.
You get an endless amount of Oreos. And don't worry about the nutritional value. It's kind of magic. They'll be plenty. People eat Oreos different ways. Do you have a special way you eat your Oreos?
With milk.
Great. The milk's yours. You will have an endless supply of Oreos and milk. And I think we also allow people to take one book. Well, you can take one book if you so choose.
That's a tough one.
What about Shakespeare, The Life Work?
You know, I have one of those. I must admit that I've not read them all.
Yeah.
Well, really, thank you so much for spending your time with us. And it is an absolute joy to meet you.
Go for launch.
T-minus 30 seconds.
Roger, go.
Walda, wish you a good trip.
Crew one for all.
We'll see you soon.
Safe flight.
Pressing for strawback recheck.
Don't forget your seatbelt.
T-minus 15 seconds.
Will you see me soon, or is this a real goodbye?
We're going to come visit you soon.
Save the Oreos for us and a few bagels.
Bring the bagels.
And some schmear. It will be delicious.
Stage 1 propulsion is nominal.
Power and telemetry nominal. Vehicle supersonic.
We hope you've enjoyed it. A remarkable discussion with Walda Roseman.
Thanks, guys, for joining us for our first episode this season. And tune in next time for Bridget McNulty. Dun, 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 while we send her to the moon. Moon snacks is really fun to say, by the way.
It is.
Moon snacks, moon snacks.
Moon Snacks is sponsored by Highlands and Islands Enterprise and Light Dark Light, with host Jessica Fox and Ed Hoffman and special guest Walda Roseman. It was produced, edited, and with original music by me, Ben Please.
Brought to you in partnership with Highlands and Islands Enterprise, the Economic and Community Development Agency for the North and West of Scotland, hie.co.uk.